Chapter 41. The Jodel and its native wilds. The Rigi Kulm is an imposing alpine mass, 6,000 feet high, which stands by itself and commands a mighty prospect of blue lakes, green valleys, and snowy mountains, a compact and magnificent picture 300 miles in circumference. The ascent is made by rail, or horseback, or on foot, as one may prefer. I and my agent panoplied ourselves in walking costume, one bright morning, and started down the lake on the steamboat. We got ashore at the village of Weigis, 3/4 of an hour distant from Lucerne. This village is at the foot of the mountain. We were soon tramping leisurely up the leafy mule path, and then the talk began to flow, as usual. It was 12 o'clock noon, and a breezy, cloudless day. The ascent was gradual, and the glimpses, from under the curtaining boughs, of blue water, and tiny sailboats, and beetling cliffs, were as charming as glimpses of dreamland. All the circumstances were perfect, and the anticipations too, for we should soon be enjoying, for the first time, that wonderful spectacle, an alpine sunrise, the object of our journey. There was, apparently, no real need for hurry, for the guidebook made the walking distance from Weigis to the summit only 3 hours and a quarter. I say, apparently, because the guidebook had already fooled us once about the distance from Allerheiligen to Oppene, and for aught I knew it might be getting ready to fool us again. We were only certain, as to the altitudes we calculated to find out for ourselves, how many hours it is from the bottom to the top. The summit is 6,000 feet above the sea, but only 4,500 feet above the lake. When we had walked half an hour, we were fairly into the swing and humor of the undertaking, so we cleared for action. That is to say, we got a boy whom we met to carry our alpenstocks, and satchels and overcoats and things for us. That left us free for business. I suppose we must have stopped oftener to stretch out on the grass in the shade, and take a bit of a smoke than this boy was used to, for presently he asked if it had been our idea to hire him by the job, or by the year. We told him he could move along if he was in a hurry. He said he wasn't in such a very particular hurry, but he wanted to get to the top while he was young. We told him to clear out then, and leave the things at the uppermost hotel, and say we should be along presently. He said he would secure us a hotel if he could, but if they were all full he would ask them to build another one and hurry up, and get the paint and plaster dry against we arrived. Still gently chaffing us, he pushed ahead, up the trail, and soon disappeared. By 6 o'clock we were pretty high up in the air, and the view of lake and mountains had greatly grown in breadth and interest. We halted a while at a little public house, where we had bread and cheese, and 1/4 to 2 of fresh milk, out on the porch, with the big panorama all before us, and then moved on again. 10 minutes afterward we met a hot, red-faced man plunging down the mountain, making mighty strides, swinging his alpenstock ahead of him, and taking a grip on the ground with its iron point to support these big strides. He stopped, fanned himself with his hat, swabbed the perspiration from his face and neck with a red handkerchief, panted a moment or two, and asked how far to Weigis. I said 3 hours. He looked surprised, and said, "Why, it seems as if I could toss a biscuit into the lake from here, it's so close by. Is that an inn, there?" I said it was. "Well," said he, "I can't stand another 3 hours, I've had enough today, I'll take a bed there." I asked, "Are we nearly to the top?" "Nearly to the top? Why, bless your soul, you haven't really started, yet." I said we would put up at the inn too. So we turned back, and ordered a hot supper, and had quite a jolly evening of it with this Englishman. The German landlady gave us neat rooms and nice beds, and when I and my agent turned in, it was with the resolution to be up early, and make the utmost of our first alpine sunrise. But of course we were dead tired, and slept like policemen. So when we awoke in the morning, and ran to the window it was already too late, because it was 11:30. It was a sharp disappointment. However, we ordered breakfast and told the landlady to call the Englishman, but she said he was already up and off at daybreak and swearing like mad about something or other. We could not find out what the matter was. He had asked the landlady the altitude of her place above the level of the lake, and she told him 1,495 feet. That was all that was said. Then he lost his temper. He said that between fools and guidebooks, a man could acquire ignorance enough in 24 hours in a country like this to last him a year. Harris believed our boy had been loading him up with misinformation, and this was probably the case, for his epithet described that boy to a dot. We got underway about the turn of noon, and pulled out for the summit again, with a fresh and vigorous step. When we had gone about 200 yards, and stopped to rest, I glanced to the left, while I was lighting my pipe, and in the distance detected a long worm of black smoke crawling lazily up the steep mountain. Of course that was the locomotive. We propped ourselves on our elbows at once, to gaze, for we had never seen a mountain railway yet. Presently we could make out the train. It seemed incredible that that thing should creep straight up a sharp slant like the roof of a house, but there it was, and it was doing that very miracle. In the course of a couple hours we reached a fine breezy altitude, where the little shepherd huts had big stones all over their roofs, to hold them down to the earth, when the great storms rage. The country was wild and rocky about here, but there were plenty of trees, plenty of moss, and grass. Away off on the opposite shore of the lake we could see some villages, and now for the first time we could observe the real difference between their proportions, and those of the giant mountains at whose feet they slept. When one is in one of those villages it seems spacious, and its houses seem high, and not out of proportion to the mountain that overhangs them, but from our altitude, what a change! The mountains were bigger and grander than ever, as they stood there thinking their solemn thoughts with their heads in the drifting clouds, but the villages at their feet, when the painstaking eye could trace them up and find them, were so reduced, almost invisible, and lay so flat against the ground, that the exactest simile I can devise is to compare them to ant deposits of granulated dirt overshadowed by the huge bulk of a cathedral. The steamboats skimming along under the stupendous precipices were diminished by distance to the daintiest little toys, the sailboats and rowboats to shallops proper for ferries, that keep house in the cups of lilies and ride to court on the backs of bumblebees. Presently we came upon half a dozen sheep nibbling grass in the spray of a stream of clear water that sprang from a rock wall 100 feet high, and all at once our ears were startled with a melodious L. Dot 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 L. Dot 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 L L L O L O L I O O O. Pealing joyously from a near but invisible source, and recognized that we were hearing for the first time the famous Alpine jodel in its own native wilds. And we recognized, also, that it was that sort of quaint commingling of baritone and falsetto which at home we call Yearly's warbling. The jodeling, pronounced yodeling emphasis on the O, continued, and was very pleasant and inspiriting to hear. Now the jodeler appeared a shepherd boy of 16, and in our gladness and gratitude we gave him a franc to jodle some more. So he jodled and we listened. We moved on. Presently, and he generously jodled us out of sight. After about 15 minutes we came across another shepherd boy who was jodling, and gave him half a franc to keep it up. He also jodled us out of sight. After that, we found a jodler every 10 minutes. We gave the first one 8 cents, the second one 6 cents, the third one 4, the fourth one a penny, contributed nothing to nose. 5, 6, and 7, and during the remainder of the day, hired the rest of the jodlers, at a franc apiece, not to jodle anymore. There is somewhat too much of the jodling in the Alps. About the middle of the afternoon we passed through a prodigious natural gateway called the Full Center, formed by two enormous upright rocks, with a third lying across the top. There was a very attractive little hotel close by, but our energies were not conquered yet, so we went on. 3 hours afterward we came to the railway track. It was planted straight up the mountain with the slant of a ladder that leans against a house, and it seemed to us that man would need good nerves who proposed to travel up it, or down it either. During the latter part of the afternoon we cooled our roasting interiors with ice-cold water from clear streams, the only really satisfying water we had tasted since we left home, for at the hotels on the continent they merely give you a tumbler of ice to soak your water in, and that only modifies its hotness, doesn't make it cold. Water can only be made cold enough for summer comfort by being prepared in a refrigerator or a closed ice pitcher. Europeans say ice water impairs digestion. How do they know? They never drink any. At 6:10 we reached the Kultvet station, where there is a spacious hotel with great verandas which command a majestic expanse of lake and mountain scenery. We were pretty well fagged out now, but as we did not wish to miss the alpine sunrise, we got through our dinner as quickly as possible, and hurried off to bed. It was unspeakably comfortable to stretch our weary limbs between the cool, damp sheets. And how we did sleep! For there is no opiate like alpine pedestrianism. In the morning we both awoke, and leaped out of bed at the same instant, and ran and stripped aside the window curtains. But we suffered a bitter disappointment again. It was already 3:30 in the afternoon. We dressed sullenly, and in ill spirits, each accusing the other of oversleeping. Harris said if we had brought the courier along, as we ought to have done, we should not have missed these sunrises. I said he knew very well that one of us would have to sit up and wake the courier, and I added that we were having trouble enough to take care of ourselves on this climb without having to take care of a courier besides. During breakfast our spirits came up a little, since we found by this guidebook that in the hotels on the summit the tourist is not left to trust to luck for his sunrise, but is roused bedlams by a man who goes through the halls with a great alpine horn, blowing blasts that would raise the dead. And there was another consoling thing. The guidebook said that up there on the summit the guests did not wait to dress much, but seized a red bed blanket, and sailed out arrayed like an Indian. This was good. This would be romantic. 250 people grouped on the windy summit, with their hair flying, and their red blankets flapping, in the solemn presence of the coming sun, would be a striking and memorable spectacle. So it was good luck, not ill luck, that we had missed those other sunrises. We were informed by the guidebook that we were now 3,228 feet above the level of the lake, therefore full 2/3 of our journey had been accomplished. We got away at 4:15 p.m. 100 yards above the hotel the railway divided. One track went straight up the steep hill, the other one turned square off to the right, with a very slight grade. We took the latter, and followed it more than a mile, turned a rocky corner, and came in sight of a handsome new hotel. If we had gone on, we should have arrived at the summit, but Harris preferred to ask a lot of questions, as usual, of a man who didn't know anything, and he told us to go back, and follow the other route. We did so. We could ill afford this loss of time. We climbed and climbed, and we kept on climbing. We reached about 40 summits, but there was always another one just ahead. It came on to rain, and it rained in dead earnest. We were soaked through, and it was bitter cold. Next a smoky fog of clouds covered the whole region densely, and we took to the railway ties to keep from getting lost. Sometimes we slopped along in a narrow path on the left-hand side of the track, but by and by when the fog blew us aside a little, and we saw that we were treading the rampart of a precipice, and that our left elbows were projecting over a perfectly boundless and bottomless vacancy, we gasped, and jumped for the ties again. The night shut down, dark and drizzly and cold. About 8 in the evening the fog lifted, and showed us a well-worn path which led up a very steep rise to the left. We took it, and as soon as we had got far enough from the railway, to render the finding it again an impossibility, the fog shut down on us once more. We were in a bleak, unsheltered place now, and had to trudge right along, in order to keep warm, though we rather expected to go over a precipice, sooner or later. About 9 o'clock we made an important discovery that we were not in any path. We groped around a while on our hands and knees, but we could not find it, so we sat down in the mud, and the wet scant grass to wait. We were terrified into this by being suddenly confronted with a vast body which showed itself vaguely for an instant, and in the next instant was smothered in the fog again. It was really the hotel we were after, monstrously magnified by the fog, but we took it for the face of a precipice, and decided not to try to claw up it. We sat there an hour, with chattering teeth and quivering bodies, and quarreled over all sorts of trifles, but gave most of our attention to abusing each other for the stupidity of deserting the railway track. We sat with our backs to the precipice, because what little wind there was came from that quarter. At some time or other the fog thinned a little, we did not know when, for we were facing the empty universe, and the thinness could not show, but at last Harris happened to look around, and there stood a huge, dim, spectral hotel where the precipice had been. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.